Hello and welcome to the MB Om podcast, where you will learn to master the business of yoga with guests from around the world who have experienced becoming successful yoga teachers, studio owners, and much more. Now, here's your host, Amanda Kingsmith.
Hey everyone, and happy Monday. I'm super excited that you're all here for another new episode of the MB Om podcast. And as always, I'm super excited for today's guests. I love that I get the chance to talk with so many diverse people from around the world. And today's guest is joining me from Toronto, Ontario in Canada. And her name is Laura Fraser. And I found Laura while I was just sort of perusing the internet, looking at business resources. And I came across her website, Little Black Leggings, which is dedicated towards the marketing and business side of yoga. And I was like, wow, I need to talk to this girl. She's completely on the same page as me. She has a business degree. She's also a yoga teacher. So Laura and I are very aligned in the things that we're doing in the yoga industry. And so I was super excited to hop on a call with her and talk to her about all things business and yoga. And we really dig deep into the business side of yoga and what it means to be an authentic yoga teacher and much more. So hopefully you all enjoy this interview. And without further ado, here's Laura. All right. I've got Laura Fraser here with me today, and she's joining me from Toronto. Is that right?
Right. I'm in Toronto.
Cool. I was hoping that we could start with a little bit of your background in yoga, how you first discovered yoga and began practicing.
Sure. I mean, if I'm being totally honest, way back to the beginning, I started practicing yoga about once a week when I was in high school. I played competitive hockey, so I kind of saw it as like my rest days. And I didn't love it. I kind of did it because it was a social thing that I was doing with my friend. It wasn't until I was in university where I started practicing a little bit more regularly, decided I was enjoying it a bit more. At the time, I was studying business, and I felt like there was a bit of a disconnect between my values and what I was learning in school. So I kind of went into a bit of like a, I need to have more self-inquiry in my life panic mode. And so I made the decision during my last year of business school just to do a weekend-long yoga retreat. It was north of Montreal in Valmarennes called the Shivananda Yoga Center. And that retreat like really opened my eyes to just how amazing it felt to be immersed in yoga. When I graduated, I came back to Toronto, which is where my family is from. And in my parents' neighborhood, they were just opening up a Power Yoga Canada. I fell in love with the practice there. And it was like from there, I just realized that I really wanted to become a teacher. I wanted to, I just had this feeling of that I was exactly where I was supposed to be. So that's how I came to teach.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. That's actually pretty similar to like sort of my like teaching path, although it took me longer to actually do my teacher training. I kind of like fumbled my way along after business school for a little bit longer than you did. But
yeah, well, I think that it's really easy to come up with a lot of excuses for why it's not the right time to do a teacher training. When I came back to Toronto, I was working in advertising and I was so, I'm going to say I was so busy, and also I was just very stuck in the idea of how busy I was too. It was just like a combination of those two things. So I definitely put it off for longer than I needed to.
Yeah. I think that that's something that I've really like learned in general is that like, you know, the time is never going to feel like 100% right. And if you want to do it, you should just go for it. And that's kind of with like yoga as well as non-yoga related things, but particularly for a yoga teacher training.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so you did your training with Power Yoga Canada?
Right. Yeah.
Oh, that's super cool. I read Baron Baptiste, Perfectly Imperfect this past summer. And I was like, wow, this is like such a cool program. And like, I love everything that he stands for and he has to say.
Yeah. I love, his journey into power flow. I think that it integrates like just all the things that I love about a vinyasa practice. And I actually haven't read Perfectly Imperfect yet. It's like on my to-read list. But everything that he's written is really great. I love the way that he integrates different religions and yoga teachings through everything that he does.
Yeah. I love that the book was just like so, I don't know. It was exactly that, exactly what you just said. He kind of like integrates all parts of like the eight limbs of yoga and the practices on and off the mat and different examples of his life and things he's seen, and just like a super easy read. And I didn't really know about anything about like Baron Baptiste and power yoga before that. So it was a good introduction for me for sure.
Amazing. Yeah. It's on my list.
Yeah. You'll get to it eventually. I'm curious, like, so you have this business degree, you have this Power Yoga Canada certification to teach. What was your sort of like path as a teacher?
What do you mean by that?
Like, what did you sort of do? Like, did you start teaching right away? Were you working a career job or?
Okay. Yeah. So I was working in advertising still when I decided to get my yoga teacher training. I was like, okay, screw it. I'm going to commit to this and the rest of my life will make way for it. So I did my teacher training, finished, and I started teaching. I was just subbing classes in the beginning. And I was working a lot and I was exhausted. I felt like teaching on top of the work that I was doing, as much as it lit me up to teach, it was too much. And I didn't think that I could give teaching the attention that I felt like it needed from me, or the attention that I really wanted to give it. I had this amazing opportunity about a year and a half ago to move from that full crazy time advertising job to now I work 3 days a week in a marketing office. And that has given me the opportunity to, you know, have regular scheduled classes, to teach four classes a week and take on additional subs if I want to, depending on how I'm feeling. And that has been really great.
Yeah. That sounds like definitely the best of both worlds. Cause I've talked to people who have done exactly like what you've done, where it's like you work 40 hours a week and then you're teaching all these classes and you're like literally drained. And then when you like fully leave this career job, all of a sudden you transition into like 20, 25 yoga classes a week. And then you're like just as drained.
Right. I think that was something I was clear on from the beginning, is I knew that now is not the time for me. And I'm not sure if it's ever going to be the time for me to move to full-time yoga. In Big Magic, which is written by Liz Gilbert, she talks about creativity and being an artist. And one of the things that she says is that relying on your art for all of your income is a lot of pressure to put on your art. And I feel that way about teaching yoga. I think that as teachers, we've probably all been in a space where, although we're into teaching because of the way we want to share ourselves or share yoga with our students, I think that all of us have been in the position where we think about the money a little bit more than we ever thought that we would, right? Like I don't know if I want to sub this class because I'm only going to make X from it, or any thoughts that are similar to that. So I knew that when I left advertising, I still wanted to have some sort of income outside of yoga that would be able to take that pressure off. So that wouldn't be my main focus with my teaching.
Yeah. I think that that's a great idea, because it's like, it's also like how you come across to your students. Like, I feel like they can kind of like feel like the shift in energy when you're like, I really need this money. Like, I actually can't pay rent if I'm like not teaching today. And it's almost like you come across so differently, I feel like, than if you're just like very relaxed about it. And it's, you know, the money is nice. It's there, but it's not like your main focus for being there.
Right. And I know that I have friends who are yoga teachers full time who do it beautifully, and they have never come off to me as people who are worried about the money. And they're amazing teachers and they have the energy to be able to lend themselves fully to every class that they're in. So I think that there are people who can definitely do it. I'm not sure that it's in my blood.
Yeah. I can totally relate to that. I've sort of felt the same way. It's like something I've like talk to so many people about for the podcast, and I mean off the podcast as well, in the studio space. And I don't know. I just think about myself and the way that I am personally. And I'm like, I don't think that that's something that I could do and be really happy with. And I think that it's important for people to know that there's like no right or wrong. Like, you're not a bad yoga teacher if you don't want to teach 20 classes a week and that doesn't feel right for you.
Right. Exactly. And I think that like the goal is just to work towards the most authentic versions of ourselves. And if that means teaching once a month or like, I have a friend, who he used to teach for Power Yoga Canada, Chesley Long. He founded Camp Yoga. Mm-hmm. So he runs almost like adult summer camp sessions, like weekend long sessions, around North America. And it's all like, you can take like 10 yoga classes in the weekend and there are workshops and everything. It's awesome. But I asked him, like, are you still teaching? Cause he's traveling around right now, making these connections. And he's like, well, not really. And when I do teach, I don't even know if I'm allowed to call it yoga. So I think that like, if we're all working towards finding that most authentic version of ourselves, like it doesn't need to look like a number or even something that fits within a box of what a yoga teacher is supposed to look like or what somebody with a yoga business is supposed to look like.
Yeah. I think that people get really attached to what it's supposed to look like. And I feel like that's the practice as well. I was writing a blog post last night actually about, that same sort of concept, like how it's like, when you step outside of a studio space, it's almost like you get in your head what your practice should look like or what you should look like as a teacher. But there's not really like, what does that even mean? Like, that's not really even a thing. You know, it's like if you're stepping forward and being yourself and presenting what you have to present or practicing what's like feels good for you, then that should be good enough.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm curious about, you have a business background and you've been in the yoga industry for a number of years now. What are some of the like biggest business lessons that you've learned or some of the biggest things that you've seen within the industry?
So I think that, and maybe this isn't a lesson so much as just something that I have internalized that I think is so important. I think that to go far as a yoga teacher, it might be slower, but you have to be authentic. You have to share from your life. And you have to be, like we were talking about, you have to be yourself. You can't be focused on your image or what you're supposed to look like as a yoga teacher. I think that, so specifically within business, because my background's in marketing, I have this interest in how much are we allowed to promote ourselves when we're trying to grow our yoga business. And I think that that's a balance that we're all trying to figure out, right? And I'm sure you even have this with the podcast, like that we're on right now, right? Like how much can you actually push the podcast while staying true to, you know, something that feels right for you?
Totally.
So I think that even if it's kind of slow and steady, my number one rule would be like, you have to check in with yourself and you have to do something that's right for you and you have to be authentic and you have to be honest with others and with yourself.
Yeah, no, that's a great, great piece of advice. And I definitely do find that with, especially like social media with, you know, my personal account, my podcast account, it's like, it's easy to get wrapped up into like, you know, what do people want? And it's like, it's not what people want. It's like what I have to put out there and the people who are attracted to that will, you know, they'll find it type thing.
Right. Exactly. I came to the realization like a few months ago. So I teach both, classes and, I teach some privates. Right now I have one recurring private. And I realized and had to be really honest with myself that classes light me up and I can show up in a way that I cannot show up in a private. Like for privates for me feel like work and teaching a class has never felt like work for me. And that's something that just when I became clear on, I think it makes it easier to be a yoga teacher by profession if you know and you're honest with yourself by like what feels right and looks right for you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing that you came to that realization. Do you feel like you've stepped away from privates a little bit because of that? Or is it just knowing that like you still offer them, but it like feels different to you?
Yeah. So I never, I didn't end any privates, but it's been much easier to look at opportunities that come my way and to be able to communicate with other people. Like, no, I'm not interested in that. Or yes, I'm interested in that opportunity. Like, there's a gym in downtown Toronto and they were looking for teachers. And when I found out that it was mostly going to be sort of privates and building privates in that way, it was after coming to that realization a few months ago, it was really easy for me right away to be like, no, this isn't, I'm not, even though it's like this awesome opportunity, it's not even something I can entertain. It's not going to sustain me.
Right. Yeah. No, that's cool. It's always like a hard decision to make that type of decision. Did you like battle mm-hmm. with it in your mind at all? Or was it like, you were very clear on like, okay, this is like not really, you know, what I'm looking for at the moment.
I think that the battle was very short, if there was a battle at all, which is, yeah, I think like I thought about it and, but having, you know, done that work already and realized that like, that's not what I want out of my teaching. Then it didn't take much convincing internally for me to realize that it was, yeah. That it would be wrong for me.
No, yeah. Totally. That's a great place to be like in your teaching, like in your own like personal like space, because I know mm-hmm. that for me, I've had like about many different things like, oh, I should be doing this, but like, oh, if I'm being honest, I don't actually want to do this. Does that make me like a bad person in this way? And I think that a lot of us kind of like battle with these things, and it's cool when you can get like really clear on what you want and just be able to acknowledge that like, okay, that's like not in line with what I want. So I'm going to say no to that opportunity.
Right. I'm sure that probably every single person who's done a yoga teacher training has been asked at some point by like the world who's trying to figure us out and put us in boxes and stuff. I'm sure every single person who's done a yoga teacher training has been asked if we want to own a studio one day. Right. And
yeah,
I
totally.
Think that's probably the first thing very early on that we ask ourselves, like, well, do I want to own a studio one day? Some people who do a yoga teacher training don't even want to teach. Like there are people who were in my yoga teacher training who it was this amazing transformative, process where they got to do tons of self-inquiry and meditation and take their practice to a new level, but they never at any point wanted to teach. So yeah, I think that yoga teacher training for me and for a lot of people I know was like that first opportunity where we got to say like, okay, I really love this practice and I can become clear on the things that I want out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I love that you brought up that yoga studio point, because that's actually like one of the things that I found the most confusing when I was in my yoga teacher training. And then once I like left my yoga teacher training, was people would be like, oh yeah, I think like I want to own a studio. And I was like, okay, cool. Like you want to like run a business. Like that's really neat. Cause like I was coming from this place of like this business mindset, and cause mm-hmm. I hadn't been out of a corporate job for that long. And I was like, you know, within like 4 years out of university type thing. And I remember talking to a couple of people who were like, oh, not really. Like, I don't really have like a business background or like any interest in business. And I was like, but running a yoga studio is a business. Like, where is this disconnect? And that was kind of a lot of my inspiration for starting the podcast, is I felt like there is a massive disconnect between teaching yoga and the business side of yoga.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't really get it in teacher trainings either. We get like a small amount of like, oh, you should create a resume, make sure you have insurance. Like,
right. And that was something I think also from my teacher training. I know that a lot of us were hesitant to ask the questions that we felt would make us seem un-yoga. Right. I think we, outside of like the people who are teaching the teacher training, those of us who were taking it at the time, I remember having multiple conversations just with the other people in my training being like, do you know how much like this studio pays? And kind of having these conversations on the sidelines, because you're afraid to ask something that somebody's going to be like, well, you're doing yoga teacher training for the wrong reason if you're taking these business, like these important, you know, facts into consideration, if that's something that you want to turn into a business for yourself. I think that yoga teachers, it's important to have both and then to figure out a balance.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I think that it's like, I mean, it does kind of seem like a little bit like, I guess, un-yoga when you start like putting money into it. But then there's also like the reality of if you want to make it a profession, there is going to be money. Money has to be involved. Like, we have to pay rent. We have to feed ourselves. Like, there's things that need to be paid for. And if you want to be a career yoga teacher, then that's where your money's going to come from.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely something like where finding balance is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think especially when it comes to something like teaching privates and you're put in the position where you have to set a dollar value to your time. I think that it's so important for yoga teachers to value their time. But it's such a hard, I don't have it figured out. I think it's such a hard thing to do. And then without even being able to compare to other yoga teachers with what they're charging for privates, I find that's a space where a lot of comparison can come up, a lot of self-doubt can come up. And so it's a really trippy exercise having to figure out, what your hour is worth.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's I was talking to, Kate Connell Potts for one of the episodes, and she specializes in private yoga. And I was like, I asked her that, how do you say I charge this much? And she's mm-hmm. You need to just pick a number where you feel you're going to be challenged in that time that you're with them, that you have to work for it, but that you're not so stressed out about it. And then you need to just be very upfront. This is what I charge. And she's most of us get in this, is this okay? And I was thinking about the first time I taught a private, and I was okay, this amount, if that's okay. If that doesn't feel right though, we can talk about
it. Right. Absolutely. So the private that I still teach now, when I originally took it over, he had actually been learning yoga from one of my friends who has never done a teacher training. So a friend who is not a teacher, was teaching him privates, for $20 an hour. And, my friend who was moving away from Toronto introduced us, and I had to be in the position where I was this is my rate. And he was that's much higher than what I was paying. And so that was a neat exercise for me because I actually had to explain to him this is why my rate is the way it is. And it was so uncomfortable. I think that I had four different conversations open with my phone or on my phone with other yoga teacher friends trying to be whoa, what do I say to this? But it was such an important thing for me to go through, as for my own understanding of my business as a yoga teacher.
Yeah, definitely. Do you feel from that experience that that conversation the next time around would be a lot easier?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think that definitely. That's the biggest thing to remember is you have it sort of once, twice, three times, it's going to feel uncomfortable, and then it's just going to become more of a natural.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Talking about money is always a difficult thing. And especially we do it quite a bit in the yoga world, which is, it's complex because it feels so un-yoga, like we said before.
Mm-hmm. But I think that it's something that we need to get past. I think that, it's so complex. On my website, Little Black Leggings, which is this website where I talk about the business of yoga, I'm not currently growing it very much. But I have had the opportunity to interview a lot of yoga entrepreneurs. And one of the entrepreneurs that I interviewed, Bill Lowndry, he founded a website called The Yoke, which is, it connects yoga teachers with students outside of studios. So basically his model allows for yoga teachers to keep more of the profits from a class, but also charge less so that the cost isn't put on the student so much. So it's making yoga more accessible, right? And I think that accessibility of yoga is also something that we need to consider, because I don't think that anybody got into yoga because they only want to teach rich people.
Totally.
Right. So I think that we all need to be able to strike this balance of, knowing what we're worth and also figuring out a way that we can give back, and how we can teach yoga in spaces or to people who can't afford $20 for a drop-in class.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. That's such a great idea, is to make yoga you know, accessible for people who, you know, can't afford that drop in rate. I know I taught for a studio that does like a karma class once a week, and it's like an $8 donation that goes to charity. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's a cool idea. Most studios that I've taught for have done like some form of karma class that's by donation, which I think is a great idea because it gives people the opportunity to come try yoga if they've never done it before. It gives them the opportunity to come drop in if it's not really in their budget.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and especially if there's a cause that's important to you, being like as a teacher, putting yourself in the position where you're teaching those karma classes and not necessarily getting paid for them, can actually be like, I think my favorite class that I've taught all year, 2016, was one that I did where the proceeds went to the Gord Downie Foundation for Brain Cancer Research at Sunnybrook Hospital. And so I had lost my granny to brain cancer earlier this year, and so many people turned up, and it was just such a good time. This class where I didn't even get paid because I didn't want to get paid, was like my favorite yoga class of the year, like by far. So it's nice every once in a while, like business of yoga aside, to like reconnect with, you know, just things that drive us.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's not the first time I've heard that either. And I think that it's like knowing that like your community is a huge part of being a yoga teacher and kind of like embodying the entire yoga practice, like on and off the mat. And, you know, sometimes part of, I mean, it's not even not business. It's like, not that it needs to be like a way to get people to, you know, try your class or anything, but it's just a way of you being able to like serve your community in a way where you're not getting paid for it and just have people be able to come and like really enjoy this teaching that you're offering.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that it's cool to give back like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's also finding the balance as well with that. It's finding the balance, between times where you like get paid and times where you don't get paid.
Totally. Yeah. And I remember, so it's been a few months since I finished it, but in Thrive by Arianna Huffington, like she says, like she talks about how when we give, we realize how much we actually have as well. I think that like it's tough. Like it's tough to make a living off of yoga. But when we're able to like give back, we're able to feel a lot more abundant about what we do. Abundant with our time, abundant with our resources. And yeah, I think it's important.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So you kind of brought up Little Black Leggings a little bit. I would love to, I know you're not growing it right now, but I'd love to sort of touch on that because I know that's how I found you. And I was like, wow, she's like on board with everything that I'm doing, which is super cool. What was sort of your inspiration for creating the website?
I think that for me, it actually had to do with more the marketing side of yoga. As I mentioned, I'm really interested in how yogis find that balance. But I was also really interested in sharing some of what I had learned and some of what just I believe about social media and like creating websites and stuff, just so other yoga teachers could benefit from that, like understand how their Instagram page comes together to tell a story about who they are, for example, how if they have a website, how they can improve their SEO and like why that's important and how they can do it really easily, right? If they don't have a background in anything to do with web design, how could I make it really easy for people who are my friends and other yoga teachers to market themselves and like to create online presences that helped them like spread yoga.
Yeah. I love that. That's such a great way to use like your background from the business world to like integrate it with your yoga teaching and, you know, helping friends. And I mean, probably yoga teachers all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Have you
thank you.
Yeah. Did you get really good feedback from it? Like from your friends and stuff that you were like, hey, go check this out. I put these resources together.
Actually, it's funny. I think that I went in with the intention that it would be more like that. And the best feedback that I've gotten have been from people like you. I've connected with another yoga teacher in Toronto who's also a graphic designer. I think just like in some ways, I just keep connecting with other yoga entrepreneurs who are doing something in the yoga space that isn't necessarily just teaching. And I've had really great feedback and conversations with them.
That's really cool. I love that.
It would be like that. Yeah.
That's so neat. It's always cool to connect with like one of the things I love most about the podcast is just hearing like all the different things that people are doing, like kind of in the yoga space or like with yoga, with something else on the side. And I think that it's like really cool when you can, I think it's cool if you can teach 25 classes a week, but if you also have other interests that you're pursuing, I think that that's also really neat.
Yeah, that was another one of my goals with the website was to interview a lot of yoga entrepreneurs who are doing something outside of just doing yoga full time. So, you know, people who are creating athletic wear, Chesley, who I mentioned, who founded Camp Yoga, Bill Laundrie, who I mentioned, who founded this website, The Yoke, and he used to work for Couchsurfing, right? So he's like of that sharing economy mindset. Tony, who I interviewed, who is a yoga photographer and like photographs like the yoga journal events and stuff. So I think that there are so many ways to create a career or even just create like a side hustle, a side business around this thing that we really love. I don't even want to call it an industry because that feels kind of yucky to me. But like, how do we create businesses around this thing that we love and like put our hearts into it and make it our own?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you kind of like alluded to it like really early on when we were talking is that like it never, you weren't really sure if like teaching full time was what you wanted to do. And when you were kind of thinking about that, is that where you kind of were like, okay, let's like start this website and see like what comes of it and see if this is like the direction I want to go?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's just natural to want to marry things that we're interested in and good at. I'm interested in yoga. I'm interested in marketing. And how can I marry those things in the same way that I see so-and-so marrying like their passion for yoga with their like, you know, ability to web design. So that's where Little Black Leggings was born from.
Yeah, I love that. And I'll put a link for Little Black Leggings in the show notes, obviously. But I'm wondering if you can share a little bit about some of the things that you talk about on the website. So like with web design, for example, like what are some of the tips that you give people or some of the pieces of advice that you give to people?
Well, I think that it's really important to see how everything comes together. And I think that it's really important to clean up. Like I think it's really easy to have too much information and to have too much going on and to have too many conflicting fonts. So being able to kind of scale back and make things simple, like just in the same way that we teach students, like to let go of like that, those extra stuff in between poses and to be present. I think like, how can you become clear on the messages that you want to get across? Simplify it and put it online in a way that looks clean, in a way that's really easy to understand for other people. So that would be my main one with web and also social media. I think it's absolutely fine to go back through, like comb through your social channels, your social feeds, and even just delete the things that don't fit with what you're doing.
Yeah, that's cool. It's something that I'm sure like other people have thought of, but it's something I thought of as well, especially like when I kind of like switched into like, oh, okay, I'm like way more yoga now. And I'm like looking at my like feed from like 2012 and I'm like, oh, I like didn't really do very much yoga or embody like the principles of yoga at that point. And I know for me, I was like, okay, I'm just going to like leave this here because it kind of is like the progression of my life. But I like the idea of, you know, going back through and like kind of, I guess, filtering your social media so that it's kind of all on your brand.
Right. Like you can curate to tell a better story or a more consistent story with what you're about. And it doesn't, I think that like social media gets a bad reputation, or like overly, like overthinking your social media gets a bad reputation, but I don't think that it's harmful to be intentional with what you put online.
Yeah. And so for people who are like, oh, I don't even have a website, do you really recommend like having a website, even if it's just like a landing page where people can come to you and like read a little bit about yourself or about themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, actually I should have written that post. I should have written like the, like, this is how you set up your bare bones website post. But I never actually did. I think so many people online do a really great job of it. And anybody can just Google to figure out how to put up a basic website. But I think that nowadays we all have these online imprints. And even if it's just very basic, like here's my headshot and here's where I've done my teacher training from, it, like whether we like it or not, it adds an element of legitimacy that helps us when it comes to working at new studios or bringing workshops to new spaces, or selling ourselves to a potential private, right? Being able to say, like, this is where you can learn more about me. So, yeah, I think it's really important for people to have that online presence.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of, like, what I think as well. And I know that one person I was talking to, she was like, I think that everyone should just buy the URL, like, the domain name for their name, even if they like, mm-hmm. never do anything with it. 'Cause it's like just amazing to have like laurafraser.ca.
Yeah.
Like, I have
exactly.
like amandakingsmith.com. It's just like nice to have your name. 'Cause then it's like, you can do whatever you want with it if you want to.
Right. Unfortunately for me, Laura Fraser is a super common name. And, I also share a name with Laura Fraser, the actress, who I think was on Breaking Bad. so when it comes to like the SEO for my name, it's not phenomenal. but laurafraser.ca was open, so I was able to snag that one.
That's awesome. I actually know a yoga teacher from Canmore, where I was like living before I traveled to Asia, and her name's Kristen Stewart, and she spells her name different than the actress Kristen Stewart. But Kristen Stewart, the actress, or like her media team, has bought all of like the domains.
Oh no. Yeah.
Even spelling differently. So I think she's got KristenStewart.ca because, you know, yeah. she's an American actress. But she was like, it was such a nightmare trying to find.
That's really funny.
Yeah. So
yeah. Get your domain now. 'Cause
yeah. And it's so easy and affordable to like, just get a domain name to, you know, sign up for WordPress. You can get a theme for free. There's so many tutorials on YouTube with like the back end of how to do things. I feel like, you know, it seems so daunting, but there's a lot of resources out on the internet that can really help with that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And then in terms of social media advice, do you encourage people to like pick one channel to be on, or to spread themselves across like as many channels as they can, or what's sort of your take on that?
That one's an interesting question. And I think that on the one hand, I think that people should understand and be willing to use all the major social media channels, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or as we were talking about before we started recording, even like YouTube, especially as a yoga teacher, like being able to put stuff out there. That said, I think that if you feel as though you'll do your best job of maintaining like one channel that you can be really excited about, I don't actually believe that it's necessary for a yoga teacher to be on all of them. I think it depends on the yoga business too. Something like The Yoke, which is an online platform, I think they need to be available across social media channels. Like that's non-negotiable. But for your personal brand as a yoga teacher, you can be a little bit more selective. And I also think that yoga teachers don't necessarily need to have a social channel that they've dedicated solely to yoga. I think we're complex people. We have a lot of things going on. And as long as we're not posting things that are immediately and like astonishingly contradictory to the way we present ourselves to our students, then I think being able to show multiple facets of your life and being able to show your humanity is a good thing.
Yeah. I love that. I think that it's like, it's always cool too when you like know a yoga teacher and you see them in the studio and then you follow them on social media and you see like a photo of them out with their kids or something. I really like that personally. I feel like it shows that it's like, you know, they're not just, I guess, like yoga focused. Like they're this whole person, like they have other elements to their life.
Right. And I think that because we've all been in the position where we've been students who have, I mean, when I was a student, there were some of my yoga teachers that I definitely saw as only these like unattainable, perfect yoga specimens. I'm really lucky at Power Yoga Canada. We're very encouraging of our teachers to share, like to share kind of the messy stuff, either the stuff that happens in our life or even, like the messy thoughts that we have, like being able to say like, oh yeah, this week I was really stuck in guilt or I was really stuck in my fear. So we're very encouraging of our teachers being able to share with our students, you know, all, you know, more than just this like picture perfect yoga person, that doesn't exist. Right. And I believe that we can show, you know, more of who we are online and that we can't, it doesn't hurt us.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. If you look at like people who only post like, I guess, physical asana or don't share other things, do you feel like there's anything like, I don't want to say wrong, but maybe is it like not as personal? Is it better to have like some personality added into your social media? Does that question make sense?
Yeah, I understand the question. Okay. And I also think that there are so many different opinions on, right, how we share our asana online.
Yeah.
I look at someone like Yoga Girl, who is like probably one of the most famous yoga teachers of our generation, of our time. And she shares a lot of her physical asana and she also shares a lot of herself. I think that you can do it in different ways. To me, I know that people might feel differently about her. I feel like she's very authentic, in what she shares. I think that she shares a very well-rounded picture of who she is, even though she shares a lot of pictures of her asana. And for me, figuring out a balance of what I wanted to post of my practice or not, I think it took some maturing. I think in the very beginning, it was like kind of a little bit more difficult to determine what I was doing for myself and what I was doing for social media. Mm-hmm. I think if I spend more time staging a social media shot than I did practicing yoga that day, that I can clearly say it wasn't authentic. And so I've been able to kind of move away from that stuff. And I think that, I mean, and for some people that might be totally fine. Like it might be an important part of building their yoga business. I don't know. I think that people need to figure out what works for them.
Yeah.
I definitely don't have the answer to it, but I think that, yeah, if you're, doing a pose cold and risking injury for social media, like, then maybe that's not the best. If you're doing a pose and you actually haven't practiced yoga in a month, but you've done yoga poses every day for social media, like maybe that's not right. But I don't know exactly where that line is. I think that people need to find that line for themselves.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, thank you for answering that. I was like, oh, I'm putting her in a tough spot by asking this. Because there is like, it's such a big concept. And yeah, I watched a TEDx that Yoga Girl did. And I thought that it was really interesting because she talked about social media since she became like famous on social media. And how, you know, she started by posting like all these beautiful photos on the beach and it was like, you know, beautiful asana in Aruba with this like amazing backdrop. And then one day she posted a photo of her like drinking wine, like, you know, like mm-hmm. cheers to the end of a week or something. And she got like all of this hate and lost like a ton of followers. And she was like, oh my gosh, what's going on? She realized that like people had this like idyllic idea of what she was like. And because she had never posted her life, and that's where she kind of like swapped what she does with her social media, and she lost a lot of followers, but then she like gained them back as she became like more like, this is my life. Like, I'm a human being. Like, yes, I live in this beautiful place and I practice yoga here, but I also like deal with real people things.
Right. I watched that TEDx talk as well. And I think a lot of people had the complaint, like, well, real yoga teachers don't drink. But also, like, what's more yoga? If I'm comparing, you know, somebody posting a picture of their drink versus somebody who's putting out judgmental thoughts online, I don't actually know. Like, it's difficult. I think that, I don't know, we try to stay true to who we are and like do our best not to be judgmental of how other people choose to present themselves online. It's tricky.
Yeah, definitely.
For sure.
yeah. I saw a post with like Mind Body Green that was, you know, around the American election yesterday that was almost the same thing. That's like, are you any better by hating somebody who's voting differently than you? And mm-hmm. it's kind of the same thing around yoga. Like, are you really any truer to the practice by hating somebody who posted a photo doing a handstand?
Right.
Right? It might not be what you want, but it, or what you like to post, but you know.
Yeah. I like to look for parallels, like, between what we teach too in yoga and how we run, you know, our businesses as yoga teachers or any other yoga business. And I think like, keep your eyes on your own mat is, you know, like just focus on yourself. I think that that's
yeah
an important message, an important learning for anyone like on or off their mat.
Totally. I love that. I think that it's an important thing for like practitioners to remember and for teachers to remember as well. Like, we're offering our own things and there's no like, we don't need to put ourselves on a scale comparing ourselves to other yoga teachers and what they're offering.
Mm-hmm.
Same for social media.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. Well, I want to be mindful of your time, but I'm curious where people can go to find more about you.
Yeah, laurafraser.ca. It's actually sort of like my online business card where I have stuff about yoga. So there's a tab for yoga. There's a tab for some of my other projects, including Little Black Leggings. And then I also have some calligraphy stuff on there, which we did not talk about today. But yeah, you're in the right place if you end up with like a whole bunch of calligraphy and hand lettering. Laurafraser.ca.
Yeah, and like one of the things that I found the most fascinating about you, when I went on your website was I was like, wow, she like has Little Black Leggings. She works for like in marketing. You teach at Power Yoga Canada. You did a podcast for a while, which people should also go check out, and calligraphy. Like I was clicking through and I was like, cause I just love when, you know, people pursue all the different things that they love in life. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah. I'm multi-passionate, which is a lot of fun, but also can be very confusing.
Yeah, I definitely understand that. I've had times where I'm like, maybe if I liked less things, then it would be easier to like pick a path as an entrepreneur.
Yes, exactly.
Like maybe if I just liked yoga, then it would just be easy to be like a career yoga teacher and like the path would be obvious for me. Instead, I'm like, oh, I like all these different things and I want to try them all. But anyways.
I think that in the end, they end up marrying together in ways that we don't expect. And then that's, you know, where the real beauty is. And that's where we can carve out a space for ourselves that other people haven't touched yet.
Totally. Yeah. No, I love that. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Laura.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So everyone should go check out laurafraser.ca and learn more about Laura and what she's up to with her teaching and her calligraphy and, the marketing and business side of yoga that she's working on. And I always love that when I sit down to edit the episodes or when I sit down to re-listen to them to do the show notes or to write blog posts about them, how much I get to learn again from the conversation. And I just loved re-listening to this episode. So I really hope that everyone else enjoyed listening to this. And I hope that you learned a ton from Laura. She's so insightful and filled with really good, honest and authentic tips for your business as a teacher and a studio owner. So you can find out more at www.mbomyoga.com. You can join the community on Instagram / Mastering the Business of Yoga. Same on Facebook / Mastering the Business of Yoga. And if you want to be the first to find out about new episodes, about new blog posts, about new happenings with MBOM, you can sign up for the newsletter at www.mbomyoga.com/newsletter. As always, thanks so much for listening and namaste.